Hello, welcome back to Mosaics. I'm Holly Beach, your host with the Idaho Office for Refugees. Today we are here with a very dear partner, Chandra Uprati, and he is the director, the new director of the Field Office Refugee Resettlement Center with USCRI in Twin Falls. So welcome, Chandra. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
You woke up super early to drive to Boise today.
Yes.
How you doing?
Good.
Yeah, Chandra and I were just part of an all-day kind of retreat for local Idaho resettlement leaders. So here we are, pushing through. Thanks for being here.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
And congratulations on the new promotion.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. It's pretty new, and I'm happy about it and looking forward to it. So.
And you've been with the Refugee Center in Twin Falls, I think, since the year you resettled, correct?
Correct. Since I was 17.
You were 17 years old.
Yeah.
What job did you get as a 17-year-old there?
So the first job I had at the Refugee Center was as an interpreter. I spoke very little English, but the agency did not have a choice because we were the very first family out of Nepal.
Oh, okay.
So then they used me as an interpreter for whatever I could speak.
Yeah. So. And what languages do you speak?
So I speak Nepali from Nepal, speak a little bit of Hindi, and very little Jonka from Bhutan, where I was born.
Okay. Well, that's great. So they're like, okay, you're young.
Yeah.
Your English is limited, but we need you.
True.
So, and then you stayed with the center and worked different jobs along the way?
Yeah. Yeah. To begin with, I was an interpreter. And then later I moved into RNP, what we call resettlement and placement, initial case management. And then later I did a little bit of matching grant program. But for the most part, I did RNP.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what motivated you to stay in the resettlement industry?
Being displaced at the very young age, I felt like I'd be the great candidate because I've lived that experience. But then also growing up, I never knew what I wanted to do. So I was very new to this country, very limited language. So I was willing to take whatever comes on my way, and I was offered this opportunity. So I kind of took it, and I loved every single bit of it. So.
Mm. What do you think are the benefits for you having come through that very program yourself to now leading it?
Yeah, so I've first of all, I think I've lived that experience, and I've come a long way in the last 16 years that I've lived in Twin Falls. So having that experience as a refugee, and I think now becoming the director, I think gives me that perspective to be able to serve better. But then also, at the end of the day, it just helps me satisfy the purpose of helping people, folks like me that are young, families like mine that are young, that are looking for opportunities. I think it'll help me serve them better because of my experience.
Can you share a little bit about Twin Falls, the geography, the population, the culture there, kind of the community makeup?
So Twin Falls, it's a little city in southern Idaho. Population is about 55,000, and it's growing. We've grown a lot in the last 16 years that I've lived there. It just keeps growing. As far as the diversity goes, I think the Refugee Center is probably the main source of diversity there for folks coming out from different parts of the country. We also have some Hispanic populations, but if you consider Twin Falls County, like Jerome and Filer, then there's more Hispanic community out there as well. But majority of folks are white, but and a little bit diverse.
And what's the community like?
As far as the leaders in the community, they're very supportive. The city of Twin Falls has the leadership that I'm very happy with and proud to be part of. So the mayor of the city, the chief of the police, and different leaders, a lot of these folks are employers that work with refugees, that have hired refugees. And then the folks from different facets of life. And we have people from education department, local governments, very, very supportive of the refugee programs. With that being said, I think we also have people that are against the programs or are not supportive of the programs, but not a lot. But they can be noisy at times. So, yeah.
Do you have conversations with people who might be skeptical?
Yes, once in a while, we get phone calls, and in the past, while I was working there as a case manager, I had to deal with some of those. They're just not happy, but then having a conversation always helps. A lot of it is just the misunderstanding that they have, not knowing what the program is about, not knowing about the benefits. They would tell me things that are not true. For example, they would tell me, oh, you're giving them cars or buying them houses or things of that nature, or they're here to steal jobs, right? Where the reality is very different, especially when it comes to employment. A lot of our clients are doing the jobs that most of us don't want to do. Mm. And employers are always looking for our clients because they will do whatever comes to them, and they're hardworking people, and we've had very good relationship with our employers as well. So.
Yeah, and is the goal with that they can get that starter job to get on their feet and then eventually do something that they might want to do a little bit more?
Yeah, so initially with the funding and the program requirements and different grants require them to basically accept the initial job, but that's not the end. So the idea is to get them going so they could start making money, get on their feet, and then always move up the ladder. And we have other programs in-house, such as career pathway programs, and we partner with other partners as well, including Global Talent Idaho, and we partner with colleges for technical courses and things like that. So we always encourage our clients to do more. But to begin with, we always encourage them to accept that first job so that way they could at least get things moving.
Mm-hmm. And through the Twin Falls Resettlement Program, in general, how many people do you welcome every year?
This year, 200 is our number for fiscal year 24. And we might end up receiving a little bit more than 200. Mm-hmm. And for the next year, our goal probably would be around 220 people.
Okay. What are some of the top countries represented in the people who you serve?
So right now, number one, it's DRC, Democratic Republic of Congo, followed by Afghanistan, Sudan, and some other countries in between. But those are top three.
And someone who has come to a new community, can you share with us what that first year was like for you? Anything you remember in terms of struggle or highlights?
Yeah. I think there are a lot of memories to share. When I was new, language itself was one of the challenges. I spoke very limited English, and I had a very thick, heavy accent. The other one was culture shock that I had to go through. For example, growing up, like, you would only smile to people that you know. Mm-hmm. And here I was, and everybody was like smiling friendly, and I was a bit confused.
Did the smile imply anything else, or was it just weird to you that they were all smiling?
Back home, you just smile just at people that you know that are familiar faces, basically. Mm-hmm. And that was some learning curve for me there. And then just making friends and learning about the culture was a bit challenging. And all the American slangs that we have here, that was very hard to begin with.
That's even getting hard for me to keep up with.
Yeah. We had a volunteer. Was very nice, very welcoming. We became very close friends. And she was very helpful to our family at the time. So, but again, I don't take those personally as challenges. Growing up where I grew up, we went through a lot of hardships. It's just a learning process. And mm-hmm. We continued learning. And even today, I'm still learning, right? It never stops.
Yeah, for sure. You were born in Bhutan?
Correct.
And how old were you when you left Bhutan?
I was only 6 months old, okay. So I really don't know a lot about Bhutan. And then I was 6 months old, my parents moved to Nepal into camps.
To refugee camps. Camp. Were you there in the camps with other Bhutanese refugees?
Yeah, so we had a total of 7 different camps with about 100,000 people to begin with.
Okay. Yeah. What was life like for you there as a kid?
Growing up, my entire life I've spent in refugee camps. I would describe it more like a tent, as if you're camping out there, but a little bit different at the same time. So the living arrangement is more like in tent type of setting. It was made out of bamboo sticks, plastic roofs. We never had access to flowing water or electricity. Life was hard. I remember times that we did not have enough food. There were nonprofit organizations that would donate food to us every 2 weeks, but then sometimes that food that was provided to us is not enough, right? So it was difficult. But then a lot of the folks in camps we did not know there was a different world outside of camp. So we felt like, okay, this is what it is. Mm-hmm. So you do what you do every day and trying to kind of survive one day at a time. We had this school system where the volunteers, teachers from within the community would come and teach. So we'd go to school during the day and learn English and math and other subjects. But it just gives me a perspective that, you know, you just wake up and do what you do and kind of live one day at a time without having any room to hope or dream or wanting or longing for anything more. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the perspective I have. But some of the disturbing things that I've witnessed was folks dying because they had something very simple like diarrhea or fever or there was a system but it was very poor. So there is no system to do checkups for labs and find out what's really going on.
Yeah.
And you kind of rely on a lot of traditional stuff. So people just die for, you know, very, very small reasons. I've witnessed that within my relatives as well. So not having that access. So in general, it was very difficult, very challenging. And spent 17 years in camps. It's a long time.
Yeah, your childhood.
Yeah.
What brought you joy as a kid or what was exciting for you?
Friends. I had a lot of friends and we did not have much to do, so we hung out a lot. Mm-hmm. We had nothing. It was difficult, but being with my friends, we'd always find something to do that gave me a lot of joy.
Mm-hmm. You have a very warm spirit about you, and I've just heard others share about you what a compassionate and good listener you are, and maybe part of that comes from a lot of that time you had with your friends.
Yeah. It was a great time, and culturally, it's a very close culture where we were in camps, and I knew a lot of people, and then if something comes up, then we get together because that's how you survive when you don't have anything. Mm-hmm. You need people, you need support system. It's very hard to get things done if you're on your own. So, growing up, that's what I've always witnessed, that people would come together mm-hmm. during difficult times. And I think that's still in me.
When you came to the U.S., did you have many relatives who came with you?
Me and my family and then my uncle. And then we had another uncle as well and some friends that we knew. But to begin with, it was just me and my uncle's family. There's two families. And then after a few weeks, then another uncle came. And then after that, just folks that came out of camp, but it wasn't different how close we were. We got together really quick and
in Twin Falls.
And in Twin Falls and established our own little community there.
Yeah. And did your parents or siblings come with you?
So I traveled with my mom, dad, and three other brothers. So it's a family of six, mom, dad, and four boys. No girls in the household. So I'm the third one.
That's almost my family makeup, and I'm the third one too, but I'm a girl. So I messed it up. But that's all. Everything else is the same makeup.
Okay.
Yay, the third kids are the best, I think.
I don't know.
You don't know?
Yeah.
And do you have kids now?
Yeah, I have. I have two girls. They're 5 year old. In fact, my younger one, Cece's turning six tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
And then the other one is 10, so 6 and 10.
Okay. Yeah. And what have you found about raising your girls in Twin Falls?
I wanted to give them the life that I did not have. But then also I felt like it's very hard for them to understand the value of things. It almost feels like they take everything for granted. Mm. And it's very challenging for me to help them understand that don't do this. And maybe part of it is coming out of my experience that I never took things for granted. Like I never had water, I never had electricity, I never had freedom to go outside to work, right? I never even had hopes or dreams. And sometimes when you don't have those things, it seems so valuable to you, right? And I think that's life in general, that you understand the importance of things when you don't have it.
Mm-hmm.
But then also, I don't want my kids to live the life that I lived. So it's very hard balance, right? I always try to teach them about being kind, right? Being appreciative of things that you have. Little things, and trying to teach them that you have to work for things to get things. But it's a bit of a challenge. You know, they go to kids, and I'm busy with a lot of things that I do with my work and other stuff, and it's a bit of a challenge, but I'm also very close to them every time that I spend with them. But then also, out of fairness, I'm not home often, so when I'm home, I give most of my time to them. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And was your wife born and raised in America or somewhere else?
She was also born in Bhutan.
Okay.
She came through the same program, CSI refugee programs back then. She does a lot of the work that I'm not able to do. So I think it works out well that she takes care of the kids. And she also runs the restaurant. So she's also busy, but... she deserves the credit for taking care of kids because I'm always running around. Yeah.
Tell us about your restaurant.
We bought it about 3 years ago, almost four years ago.
During COVID?
It was...
That's a scary time.
Yeah, it was during COVID. Yeah, yeah. I think it was kind of towards the end of COVID, if I'm correct. Yeah.
Good.
And on that time... I've always just been this kind of a weird person that kind of goes with the flow. I really don't plan things out. So I used to go to this restaurant, Saffron Indian Cuisine in Twin Falls. I used to go there to eat, hang out with my friends. I became friends with the owner back then. And one day he just told me that he'll shut down the restaurant. And here I was, okay, just sell it to me.
Yeah.
So that's how I bought it.
Just decided.
Yeah, just decided. And then I bought it, and then I started working there I was working on the front as a cashier, as a server, basically. And then I realized how hard it was. I was like, oh, my God, why did I do this? It was very difficult to begin with. And then
you're still working at the refugee center at this point.
So 4 years ago, I got out of grad school, and I was volunteering at the refugee center, teaching finance classes and things like that, but not working full time there. But I was doing real estate.
Okay, and your graduate degree is in the master in
business administration. Yeah, that's what I did. And then, so with the restaurant, that's how I bought it. And I was like, oh my God, I don't know what to do. And then I talked to my wife. And then it was really hard to begin with. I think when you're in the business of keeping people happy, it becomes challenging. and the level of customer service and things that you have to be careful of. And in little town like Twin Falls, you have to be extremely careful. But later we were able to hire more people. And then I told my wife that I cannot do this. So she stepped in.
Yeah.
see, I almost gave her no choice. I think at some point I was like, okay, either you help me or I'm going to close this down, because it was very tough. But then she stepped in and now she loves it.
She does.
Yeah. And I don't have to do anything. So I just go there to eat and do some finance behind the scene. But
the Indian cuisine, is that reminiscent of all of your home culture food? Or
It's a lot of Indian foods. But then also once I took over, I added some Nepali food. It's a mixer of Indian and Nepali food. So
what's kind of the defining characteristic of Nepali food?
It's very similar to Indian food. A lot of spices and cooked with passion, and people really take a lot. It takes a long time to cook, but very similar to Indian cuisine. Some of the popular meat are just chicken and goat are very popular back home. But we have a variety of vegetarian items as well.
Yeah. So I think we have a Nepali place here that has dumplings.
Dumplings, yeah. We have dumplings too, yeah.
Are they called momos or is that?
Momos, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites.
Yeah, we have dumplings too. We have chicken dumplings and vegetarian dumplings. And then we also have noodles, chow mein. Mm. Yeah.
Good. Well, that's cool that your wife is enjoying it more than you did.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everyone has their thing. I don't think I would do well in a restaurant either.
Yeah. I did it, and for me, it'd be very hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you seem to be finding your stride with the Resettlement Center.
Yeah, yeah, I enjoy it there. I've always been involved with resettlement. I went to school for about a year and a half just for my master's, because while I did my bachelor's, I was working full-time at the mm-hmm. Refugee Center, and taking online classes and things like that.
And human resources, right?
Yeah, and human resources. And then for my master's, it became a little bit challenging to do full-time jobs and mm-hmm. kids, and then do the master's online was very challenging. So I moved for about a year and a half, but I was always involved in helping folks finding housing. Even though when I was not there, I had a lot of connections in town. And then later, after I graduated, I did not know what I wanted to do. I applied for a few jobs, but then it was right during the beginning of the COVID.
Mm.
And then it was very hard to find jobs. And then I got into real estate. And surprisingly, I did extremely well. I think a lot of the connections I had in town and a lot of the former clients, basically, too. That's how I got into real estate, because I did not know what else to do.
Yeah.
And I was doing real estate, but then at the time I was volunteering at the Refugee Center, teaching finance and budgeting and things like that, because real estate wasn't busy for me. So I would always do things on site to help out folks. And so I was always involved one way or the other with the resettlement programs. In between, I worked at a few different places. I've worked with Global Talent Idaho for a little bit. I've worked with TRIO programs in the past, and I've partnered with One Refugee. So a lot of things I've done is around resettlement. So,
and kind of around that same age group with TRIO and One Refugee, it's kind of the same age group of kids young adults as you were.
Yeah.
And what do you hope to impart to them when you're doing this kind of work?
So, you know, I always think of it like myself, you know, coming at a young age and finding my way out. But then also there are challenges in between. So my advice would be just sometimes you don't, and again, it could be just personal that it was very hard for me not knowing what I wanted to do. And part of that was my maybe background, like my life style, life situation in camps, right? I was kind of the guy living one day at a time. I don't know what the future looks like. If I survive that day, I'm good.
Mm-hmm.
So then it's very hard for me to envision future or think for something and plan for it. So then my advice is just keep moving. Whatever you're doing, just keep moving. Do not stop to move, right? And a lot of the kids, while I was working with the TRIO programs and Global Talent and partnering with One Refugees, they were like, I don't know what I want to do. Mm-hmm. And I would tell them, it's okay not to know, but just keep moving, do something, take these classes. Those are like usually started general classes. So mm-hmm. you have to do those classes anyway, and then you'll find your way out. So I think that's my thing. Like, sometimes if you don't know what you want to be, it's okay, but you just got to keep moving, mm-hmm. keep moving forward. Yeah.
What brings you joy at this part of your life?
I think with my current position at the refugee programs, I think there are more things that I could do to help bring more services to my clients. But then more importantly for me, to be able to give back to the community that welcomed me, and not just the refugee programs. One of my main goals while I was buying the restaurant was I was on the board. Today I'm still on that board of this organization called Everybody Eats, which helps homeless people in town. I'm on the board there, and then there's a restaurant. We donate a lot. I'm actively involved there. We partner with Valley House Homeless Shelter, right? So growing up, it was very hard for me to have one good meal, like having to be able to eat one good dish with meat. You know, you're lucky if you get that once a year, mm-hmm. right, during festival time. So it means a lot to me. So then now I'm at a very different phase in my life where I'm able to give back. And it almost feels like obligation to me that I'm obligated to give back because somebody kept me alive for those 17 years while I was in camp. So it comes out of obligations that I need to give back and give back to the community that welcomed me. So at this point, whatever I can do to help clients at the refugee center when it comes to work or bring in more services to them. But at the community level, whatever I can do to give back to the community, I think that's what gives me joy.
Mm. Yeah. When you're working with your clients, what do you find are their deepest goals or desires?
So we resettle clients from different parts of the world, but for majority of them to begin with, they just want to work and provide for their family. That's like the initial goal for a lot of our clients. Now, sometimes we're receiving clients from Afghanistan or Ukraine, or they tend to be highly educated and qualified and are already professionals. So they wanted to continue their dream of becoming those professionals. That's where we kind of help them connect with Global Talent Idaho or Career Pathways Program to help them navigate their ways so that way they could reclaim their careers. But for a lot of the folks that are just starting out, they just want to work and provide for their family. They wanted to make sure their kids are going to school, and they're just happy to be here. They enjoy the freedom that they have. So it's very rewarding. It's very rewarding that you see families that are new and that don't know anything, and they just wanted to be here, and they're happy that they have a place that they can call it home. Mm-hmm. And then a few years down the road, 4 or 5 years, after 5 years, they're citizen of this country, and they're ready to buy a house and become citizen of America. And that moment is a very big moment because for a lot of our refugees, they're homeless. They're in the state of homelessness. Mm-hmm. So being able to belong somewhere is a big deal. So that citizenship is that paper that tells you that you belong somewhere. And we celebrate that a lot, and it was a big day for me as well that after so long, I was able to tell people that I belong somewhere in this world. It was very meaningful to me.
Yeah. Wow! Can you share more about that day? How old were you at that point?
So I was 23 at this point. You could apply for citizenship usually in 4 years and 10 months is when you can apply and going through the process and actually receiving it. And I did it like on the very, very day. I did not even want to miss a day. Here it was, okay, 4 years and 10 months, and I applied that day. I've studied all the questions about the civic test and all the requirements. It wasn't a big deal for me, but all I wanted was to belong somewhere. So then I wasted no time doing that. And so I called my friends and families, and I have a lot of them across the United States. So then it was that day, and then we came to Boise here for the oath and took a lot of pictures and shared in social media. In fact, there were Times News also did a story on that.
Very cool.
Yeah. And we had a beautiful dinner at home and family gathering and we celebrated. So
it's like probably one of the most special milestones of your life, it sounds like.
Yeah. It was a big deal. It was a big deal. So,
do you remember your first time voting?
Yes. After I got the citizenship, it was during the voting time, I think, in fact. Went there and registered and I was able to cast my vote and took pictures and share with my friends and encouraged them to do so as well. So it was very rewarding. Like, it also gave me the feeling that, oh, I have a say maybe now, you know, that I could vote for things that I favor. So
yeah. What part of the American identity do you most value or connect with?
As far as the identity goes, I think being in this country, one of the best thing is to be able to cherish the freedom, like freedom to choose, freedom to live the life that you want, freedom to be able to raise your family the way you want. I think that's maybe one of the single most important thing, and that there is room for everyone to succeed. I think that's one of the also best part of living an American life, is anyone can work towards it. And if you're a hard worker, if you're dedicated, and if you do the right thing, there is room for everyone to grow and succeed. And that's one thing that I also try to talk to my kids, that, you know, being kind, helping others to succeed is also a good thing. Mm-hmm. So just do that, be that, and it's a beautiful world. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What parts of your, and I'm having, maybe you can help me with whether you feel more rooted in like Bhutanese culture or Nepali culture, are those very similar? Can you help us understand better? And like what part you still really connect with and are rooted in?
So I'm more connected to Nepalese culture. I was born in Bhutan, but many generations ago, my great-great-great-grandparents were originally, they migrated to Bhutan from Nepal. Mm-hmm. So we were of Nepalese origin to begin with, but we happened to be there in Bhutan, born there, raised there. So then we started having our own lifestyle in Bhutan. But we've always followed Nepalese tradition and culture and things like that. So I'm more associated with Nepalese tradition and culture. Even today, I think it tends to be the case. So, yeah.
Can you share with us some of the cultural highlights that you enjoy about Nepalese culture?
Yes, so a lot of the cultural highlights, I really love this gathering and then the closeness that's in the culture, right? People, they will just walk into your house without knocking sometimes.
You like that part?
No, just joking. I don't mind, in fact. I don't
freak me
out. Yeah, so that's one thing that, you know, I still, a lot of the times, like even today, my house, the door is open always. People just walk in without knocking. And maybe you did that for so long back home, and in camps, you only close the door like at nighttime or something, or if you're really out doing stuff. That's that very close culture, very nice people. Very caring people, and the festival times are great. We had Diwali and Dasara, but then we celebrate all festival at home. We celebrate Christmas, we celebrate Eid, we celebrate Halloween. Just, we will take all the vacations that's out there.
Yeah, and all the vacations.
Yeah. So,
how do you celebrate the festivals? What are some of the traditions around that?
In regards to the Nepali culture or like other celebrations, American
Nepali culture.
We still do regular things that we used to do back in Nepal, but a little bit differently. For example, during Diwali and Dasara time, they used to shut down the school system, like for 1 month. There is no schools, really? They just celebrate. But here we just try to make it on the weekend and then still celebrate the way we used to celebrate. But then also we celebrate other holidays, like Thanksgiving is big and in my house, right? Christmas is big and Halloween is big. So we want to be able to celebrate all different cultures. Growing up, I think one of the reason my parents were displaced was because of religion, because my parents are Hindu and the government of Bhutan is Buddhist, and back in the day they just wanted Bhutan to be a Buddhist country. And then my parent did not feel comfortable, and like around the world you see so much of war and like displacement and a lot of chaos in the name of religion, but we just wanted to make it easy, I think, for myself, for my kids. But even today my wife sees Hindu practice and is religious, but then my daughter, she went to Christian school, and she knows how to do prayer, and you know, it's a beautiful thing to observe and be open to different religions and stuff like that. Yeah,
that is a beautiful thing. Yeah. Openness.
Yeah,
that's cool. What would you want to share with, you know, the Twin Falls community is growing. Some people might be unfamiliar with the program, or maybe they really want to know, oh, this is so cool, we have this. How can I best be a good welcomer? What would you share with them?
My suggestion is I would encourage them to have a conversation so we can talk about things. I think there is a lot of misinformation around immigration, but refugee resettlement is very different, very unique. So I'm always available to answer questions, but then also I would encourage folks to be part of the program. Maybe be involved with the refugee program so you get to learn, but then also experience it firsthand. So we have an open door policy at the center, so anyone can just walk in and talk to me or talk to case managers. So we have that environment at the center. So yes, there are some challenges around resettlement as well, but if you really want to learn about the program and what it entails, then I think you will maybe open your hearts and minds to it. It's a very limited, the funding for the program is very limited. Everything is kind of centered around employment. And the folks that we bring in, the refugees that we bring in, they just want to have a life, a normal life. That's what they are fighting for. And they have waited long. In my case, I've waited 17 years, and there are refugees in camps for 20 years, 30 years, is still waiting for that opportunity to have a normal life, and just like me, they're just looking for an opportunity so they could come here and move on with their life, but then also be a contributing member of the community. For example, today Twin Falls is my home. And I care deeply about my home. Mm-hmm. And anything I can do to make it a better place, I'm all in. I'm there for it. I serve at a different boards. I'm always out there doing things in the community. So these are the people that we're bringing in that wants to be part of our community.
So. That's beautiful. Chandra, thank you so much for taking the time to join us during your visit to Boise. It's always good to see you.
Sure.
And do you have any parting thoughts for us?
No, thank you. Thank you for inviting me, and I really enjoyed talking to you. And thank you for this opportunity. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for joining the conversation. For more information on how to be involved with refugee resettlement, please visit idahorefugees.org. Mosaics is produced by the Idaho Office for Refugees with grant support from the M.J. Murdoch Charitable Trust. Music by the Afrosonics. Production in partnership with SB Studios.